From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Maggie Wall. It's been 30 years since the Exxon Valdez ran aground on Bligh Reef. Fishermen warned about a possible disaster, yet their calls went unheard. We have a report on the oil spill that forever changed the lives of many Alaska fishermen and their families. As fisheries cycle through the season, so does the Coast Guard's small temporary duty stations, which are located close to the grounds. A report on the Coast Guard demobilizing its forward operating locations that cover the Bering Sea and the Aleutian waters. Next location, Cordova, to provide quick access to salmon fishermen. And we finish up with another anniversary, this time the 40th anniversary of Comfish, Alaska's longest-running commercial fisheries trade show. A special event this year, Fish in a Box. Can you identify the species by feel alone? All that coming up on this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report, right after this.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Thirty years ago, last Sunday, March 24th, the Exxon Valdez oil tanker ran aground, spilling 11 million gallons of crude into Prince William Sound. We sometimes look back and see it as an unprecedented, unthinkable event. But in fact, people warned about it, and they tried to prevent it. Before the pipeline was even built, fishermen in Cordova fought to keep oil tankers out of the sound. Today, we're airing a story from our archives. In 2017, for the series and podcast Midnight Oil, Alaska's Energy Desk looked back at the Exxon Valdez disaster. Rachel Waldholtz has the story of when the one thing fishermen worried would happen actually happened.
20 years before the pipeline was even built, Ross Mullins was already warning about an oil spill in Prince William Sound. Mullins is in his 80s now. He lives surrounded by history. Literally, his house in Cordova is piled with stuff. In the kitchen, he's watching a YouTube tutorial on mixing your own flavors of vaping fluid.
This is my favorite at the moment. It's Rakuki. It's made as raspberry, cucumber, and kiwi.
Mullins came up to Cordova from the Bay Area in the early 60s. He was a hippie and a photographer. He didn't mean to stay, but he got sucked into fishing. And when he first heard the plans for the Trans-Alaska pipeline to end in Valdez, he says he saw the risk right away. In the 60s and 70s, there was a series of well-publicized oil spills all over the world. Mullen says he knew that if Alaska's oil was transported by tanker, a disaster was inevitable. So he rallied the local fishermen's union, and they levied a penny per fish tax on themselves to hire a law firm and challenge the pipeline in 1971.
Well, we called ourselves the Mighty 500. We probably didn't have a 500.
But they went up against the oil industry and the state, and they won. Their lawsuit, along with one from national environmental groups, halted the pipeline. Their victory was short-lived. In 1973, Congress exempted the pipeline from the lawsuits. So Mullins and the fishermen switched gears. They pushed for the highest safety standards possible. He remembers one trip to D.C., standing in Senator Ted Stevens' office.
Well, one of the things I remembered distinctly him saying was, I can assure you that not one drop of oil will touch the waters of Prince William Sound.
It was one of many promises made in the 70s, as lawmakers and industry tried to get the pipeline moving. They promised that tankers operating in Prince William Sound would have double hulls, and they promised a state-of-the-art system to track vessels through the sound, and a world-class oil spill response system. But one by one, the promises made by industry, the state, and the federal government failed to materialize, or the safeguards simply eroded. In the end, the system failed more quickly than even Mullins had imagined it could.
It was a hell of a lot sooner than I thought it would be. I mean, the oil had only been going through the pipe for 12 years or whatever, and, you know, that's not a long time for something that's supposed to be state-of-the-art to function.
Flying over the sound today, the pilot points out a white and red navigational marker sticking up out of an unassuming patch of water. From 1,000 feet up, it doesn't look any bigger than a camera tripod.
You see this post right here? That's Fly Reef. That's where the Exxon Valdez ran aground.
In the distance are the icebergs calving off the giant Columbia Glacier. It was these same chunks of ice that the Exxon Valdez was trying to avoid when it collided with Bly Reef. This is the spot where all systems failed. The tanker's crew made a series of inexplicable mistakes. The captain had been drinking that night and left an overtired third mate in charge. Inadequate tracking didn't pick up the ship as it headed off course, and the shallow reef sheared right through the tanker's single hull. Today, things have changed. Congress passed a raft of reforms after the Exxon Valdez. Things like requiring new tankers to have double hulls, better vessel tracking, and escort tugboats. Prince William Sound is now guarded by an elaborate system to prevent future spills. But for years, the Exxon Valdez loomed over the fishing town of Cordova like a dark shadow. The spill coincided with plunging fish prices, and in the 90s, the town dropped into a depression. People lost their boats. They lost their livelihoods. Many worried there was no future for Cordova. Today, that fear is lifting. There's a whole new generation of fishermen. They were just kids during the spill. Like Mike Mickelson. He was 5 when the tanker struck Bly Reef.
Most of us, if not all of us, got told in school, well, whatever you do, don't go fishing and go to college and make something of yourself. And everybody went to college and quite a few of us came back and bought into fishing. So.
Today, he owns 2 fishing boats. And now, he says, there's a community of young people, all taking a chance on Prince William Sound. It's a big chance. Getting into fishing means taking out a loan to buy a permit and another loan to buy a boat.
I had a couple friends that talked me into buying into sailing. It's like, oh, yeah, hundreds of thousands of dollars, no problem. You'll be fine. And it's been a hard road, but you know, I'm going to make it. And that's the great thing.
Mickelson and his peers are making a big commitment to this place. It's a bet that fishermen can still make a living in Cordova, and that there won't be another Exxon Valdez. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Rachel Waltholz in Anchorage. This story was co-produced with Jennifer Pemberton.
This story was adapted from the podcast Midnight Oil. Episode 7 has the full story of the Exxon Valdez oil spill told by the fishermen of Prince William Sound. To hear this and other stories in the series, go to alaskapublic.org or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund, supporting conservation and harvesting of Alaska's wild, sustainable fisheries.
Coast Guard air crews finished up several months of temporary deployment out west, where they could be closer to the fishing fleet during increased periods of activity. Air Station Kodiak crews demobilized forward operation locations in St. Paul and Cold Bay on March 15th, thus concluding the supplemental coverage of the Bering Sea and Aleutian Chain.
Throughout the year, as the fishing season or other needs arise, we forward deploy our aircraft and crews around the state. So in the summer, we have a crew that pushes out to Cordova in the Prince William Sound. In the winter, during the height of the crab season, we push an aircraft out either down to Cold Bay, or this year we actually moved up to St. Paul. And then in the summer and fall timeframe, we forward deploy aircraft up to Kotzebue during the Arctic summer.
That is Lieutenant Commander Tom Huntley, a spokesman for Air Station Kodiak.
This year, as we saw the fishing fleet, where they have typically been in and around Cold Bay, this year they moved further north, and so we rapidly mobilized our crews to move up to St. Paul.
In addition to the deployed Jayhawk air crew, Coast Guard cutters Alex Haley, Douglas Monroe, and cutter John Midget also assisted. The Midget carried an MH-65 Dolphin helicopter air crew on board. They provided supplemental search and rescue support, as well as maritime law enforcement coverage in the Bering Sea. Throughout the 3-month season, the Coast Guard racked up some pretty impressive statistics, including 19 lives saved and 29 people assisted. The crews conducted 24 search and rescue cases that provided 114 total search and rescue hours.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard-accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska fishermen and their families. AMSEA at AMSEA.org or 907-747-3287.
Comfish Alaska celebrates its 40th year this weekend in Kodiak. Among the events are fisheries-related forums, Time to Honor Processing Workers, and Fish in a Box. No, not the kind of fish they pack up and send out in boxes. This is a fish in a box where you have to identify the species by feel alone. Alaska Fish Radio's Lainey Welch has more.
Comfish is set for March 28th through 30th, and topping the list of visitors is U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan, who plans to stay for a couple of days.
Senator Sullivan is planning to do a number of things around Comfish that are very exciting.
Frank Shiro is director of the Kodiak Chamber of Commerce, host of Comfish. Senator Murkowski is sending a rep and a video. Likewise, Governor Dunleavy has sent reps from his office.
John Mueller, who is a senior policy advisor, and then we also will have an Alaska Department of Fish and Game update with the Deputy Commissioner Rachel Baker.
Representative Louise Stutes also will be in the town meeting mix. Trending topics on the Comfish agenda also include a Q&A with Mark Lester, president of Alaska Aerospace Corporation, which has over 30 rockets planned for the Kodiak launch pad that could curtail fishing.
Anytime there's a launch, certain parts of the waters have to be, for safety reasons, shut off, and that has a major impact on our fisheries.
Also among the presentations, updates on the Pebble Mine permitting process, seafood marketing, safety tips, legal advice, net recycling, and more. Recognizing Kodiak's processing workers has become a Saturday tradition at Comfish, and teams from different companies will compete in various skill competitions. This year includes a shark dissection and new fish challenges, says Chamber Community Relations Director Sarah Phillips.
I've been calling it fish in a box, and by feel alone, you need to identify the fish that is within the box.
A contest showcasing the most able fishermen will bring Comfish to a close. Alaska Airlines is offering Comfish discounts. See the full lineup at kodiakchamber.org and on Facebook.
That was Alaska Fish Radio's Lainey Welch.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits. Marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
That's it for this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from Rachel Waldholtz and Jennifer Pemberton with the Alaska Energy Desk and Lainey Welch at Alaska Fish Radio. Remember, be safe, wear your life jacket, and watch out for those mystery fish hiding in those dark boxes. For KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Maggie Wall.